Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, how y'all doing?
Good.
All right. Oh. I just downloaded a timer app on my phone, so hopefully it'll work. Don't know how long I'm going. All right, let's see. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Alexander, for making this happen. Thank you for my fellow faculty and the coordinators. And thank you, Amy, for reading us your amazing poems. It was beautiful. I'm going to read you some of my poems. I'm going to start off with some poems from my book, The Maintenance of the Shimmy Shammy. Without further ado, here's the first one. This is called Plenty of Room Here Under the Big Top. The old man who lives behind our house told us this was where the traveling circus used to sleep. We smiled and believed him, but only a little. Until, while digging in the backyard for a petunia bed, I hit the elephant's back with the shovel. Carefully, I bent down to clear dark soil from the wide, pale forehead. I called to you, where you were prying dandelions out of the lawn with a steak knife, and you came running, the woman I love. You leapt into the hole with me, and together we dug and scraped away to get down to the elephant's feet, its ruby sandals glinting in the bright spring light. Now and then I'd look over and catch a glimpse of your breasts, shiny with sweat and dusted with soil inside your black tank top. You, too busy digging to notice, clearing a stray hair from your eyes now and then. It took hours and hours, but there she was, 10 feet below the lemonade sweating on our porch, one perfect elephant, encrusted with gold and precious stones. I looked at you, almost unrecognizable now for soil, and you smiled at me, teeth showing like jewels through the dirt. I climbed out of our hole and reached for you. You took my hand. And this is called If Only I'd Thought of It. Her whole family hates smoking. She told me one day window shopping for puppies. I had one going at the time, and she said, my whole family really hates smoking. I nodded and said, okay. I didn't really know what that meant, though. Did they sit around the dinner table taking turns saying, it's a nasty habit? Yes, a nasty habit. Such a nasty habit. They must have been pretty committed. And so was Mona. And so she dumped me. Then get this. Matt says he sees her out the next night with another guy, and this one's got a cigarette in his face. I couldn't believe it when he told me. The guy was blowing smoke rings as they sat alone together at a cafe. Then he reached out, grabbed the rings, and placed them over Mona's hands like bracelets. I could have done that. This is called Stop Doing That. I can't take you anywhere anymore. Last week we went to the opera. The next day, you wrote one. Do you have any idea how annoying that is? After our trip to Cape Canaveral, the last time I remember being truly happy, there you were, burrowed down in a pile of recycling in the backyard. 2 weeks later, a rumble woke me up in bed. Was it you bringing me the paper and my pipe? Well, no. It was you lifting off. Did you enjoy your little trip around the moon? Some of us never get to see the other side ourselves. We have to rely on other people to tell us just how dark it is. This is a very short poem called Typical, Really. 1,000 chipmunks woke him up from a deep sleep, and he mistook them for angels, when he could simply have been amazed at 1,000 chipmunks in one place. This is called Single Male Seeks Someone Who'll Stay. I opened the door to get the paper last Saturday, and there was a goose standing on the front step. It looked up at me, then took one step to the side, making room for me to pass. So I did. What else was there to do? I walked out onto the lawn, picked up the paper, and walked back to the door. When I opened it, the goose stepped inside and waddled into the living room. I stood outside holding the door. Did a goose just walk into my house? I said. It turned a corner and went into the hallway to the bedroom. I stepped inside. I am following a goose into my house, I said out loud as I did. I walked into the living room, turned into the hall just in time to see the goose fly up and out through a window I had not remembered leaving open. And then the goose flew away, I said out loud to no one. In fact, it was at that instant that I realized finally just how empty my life was. So those are poems from my book. Now I'm going to read some newer poems. This is called An Emergency Every Day of the Week. It's how you know I love you. The trees along the ridgeline sway into one another the way I lean into you. Clouds rush from us the way we run away from the world. An ambulance screams along the street at 3 a.m. Inside there's you on a gurney and me on a gurney. No nurses either side, not even a driver. We split the cold air like a scalpel. A bump. I reach out my hand for yours. Yours is there in the air and it clasps mine. The ambulance just went off a cliff. Now we're flying and we're fine. This is called The Secret Lives of Little Girls. How loudly you can groan if you just use your eyes. Children are adept at this, 12-year-old girls especially. Alone, high in mountain caves, along cliff sides, accessible solely by toe holds and birds of prey, they deflate and slouch a bit in ease. At such times, they might play jacks or jump a rope, its woven lines slapping the cave roof, freeing gypsum flowers to flutter down in fragments, over reeking hides and doll parts piled in corners, a sleeping area of matted glossy magazines, a fire ring of rolled socks and party-colored balls, simple flint instruments, a clamshell for stripping pelts, animal bones for holding a bow in the hair, a pom-pom here and there caked with glitter and mud. Hidden in the back, beyond reach of firelight, a dollhouse, perfectly split down the center as eggs rarely are, where the gods live, the mommy god and the daddy god, stand facing each other, either side of a four-poster bed, a cellophane fire in the living room hearth below. A dining room table set for three plates, three napkins and cutlery, a clear plastic goblet at each place. In the daughter chair, an acorn, balanced atop an acorn, a smile scraped into the top one, presumably by sharpened antler bone. This poem is called The People Who Live Near Us Are Our Neighbors. It used to have unfortunately at the end, but I took that off. Two doors down, the neighborhood kid hung a white wire reindeer with twinkle lights from a tree, as if freshly shot and ready for butchery. It's pleasing to live so near the country, the trees, the rolling hills and apple stands, but it does mean you have to put up with gunshots into the scrubland on winter evenings. Some nights, there's a patrol car parked out front. We wish him and his family the best. We eat popcorn because it's sort of old-fashioned and natural and brings us a little closer to the life of the soil. The life of the soil is nearby, past the gas station on 57, up the road from the dog park, across the intersection from where the guy lost control and slammed into a mother of three. He was driving to McDonald's. It said that on the news report. He'd smoked the heroin just before heading out for his Tuesday dinner. His little silver cloud rising above us all, the dead reindeer made of lights, the popcorn, the gradual inconsistencies, and the fields someone still plows and pulls pumpkins from when the morning dew gives gradually way to frost. This is called Gathering a Few Facts. It's enough on this Monday morning that I can remember the difference between a thorn and a prickle, and it appears as if I'll actually be getting to work on time. It's the same time as it always is in this parking garage, sodium lamp time. Who's walking suspiciously behind the car time? What would I do if someone put a gun in through my window time? Can a travel mug of hot tea work as a weapon of self-defense? I know I wouldn't want any poured on me, but then again, I'm not a criminal. I'm soft. A true thorn is a modified branch, and a prickle is something to do with the skin only. Most roses have prickles, not thorns. which is disappointing on so many levels. And the kind of thing I have to carry around with me as well as manage morning traffic. I'm keeping it together. I'm not harassing other people in their cars. I see us, many of us, sitting behind the wheel for a moment or two, gathering one or two firm facts to ourselves before gritting our teeth and stepping out onto the streets where nobody loves us. I had an office job for a couple years, which I in downtown Syracuse, and I quit it last year. These are a couple work poems. This is called, "We Come Here Every Day, So You've Already Won." I think anyone who works here should be allowed to go up to the roof whenever she wants. It's only 10 floors, and we're certainly all adults. To stand on top of the office with both feet planted firmly on its forehead, with nothing on our foreheads but the big, stupid sky, the white sky, the blank stare sky, the sky that won't help buy groceries, the sky we can't live in, the sky that doesn't keep us warm at night, that isn't a place to go when the workday's done and everyone shoots out of the building's mouth, heading home, or maybe to a treadmill to try to keep from dying, or to a bar to try to keep from dying. Imagine how good that would feel. We might jump up and down a little, but we're not gonna hurt the building. It's stronger than we are. That's obvious at this stage. We're not gonna harm the sky being so close to it. The sky will just back away to leave us more alone. Resigned to this, we're certainly not going to throw our frail bodies from the stone edge. We're not hunched at our terminals all afternoon, picturing how we'll look reaching into air either side with the sore, bird-like hands with the sore, bird-like claws our hands have become. This is called, "You Can Keep Your Employee of the Month Award." I need to work out a way to keep my rowboat with me even at work. Double the amount of productivity you expect me to crank out? Sure, if I can do it standing in my rowboat, looking off into the distance for a heron nest inside the cottonwoods. Am I working quickly enough? Let me know when you get the chance. I'll be floating along the shore watching midges form new constellations against a sky so blue it makes your eyes squeak. I'm going to have to clock in at the start of my day and clock out before leaving. Just make sure the button can be operated by one end of an oar, with me holding on to the other, leaning out of, but still firmly seated in, my rowboat. Dreaming of Lime Trees is the name I've just decided my boat will be called. I'm probably 1,000 miles from the nearest lime tree, but the sparkling water I just sipped is lime-flavored, and that got me thinking. You'd never accept that sort of non-linear thinking from an employee, but I did it on my break. Paddling out toward the open water, enjoying my muscles, waking up inside my shirt, the tang of fresh air forcing its way into my nostrils. In 15 minutes, I'll be back, I know you find that hard to believe, at my desk, in my chair, at my computer, with my eyes doing what you pay me to have them do. And when I wobble a little, it's because a rowboat in an office is going to wobble a little. This is called Barely Managing the Houseplants Thing. I refuse to give up on the Majesty Palm. Everyone says I was a sucker for buying. You get what you pay for, they say. And I say, I paid $10. And they start to smile, and I lean in ready to nip at them. I'm like a terrier for my peeps. The protective instinct. I can't make the sun shine out of my face, though. It's cold, and we're north, and the sun is a jerk. And this isn't July. The Majesty Palm and I just have to make it to July. I picture myself and the plant on the deck, buzzing with heat, waving our fronds in almost tropical breezes. I clipped off 4 whole branches this morning, because there's no coming back to life once you're that yellow and crinkly. Someone said it was a marketing scam. They live on riversides in Madagascar, are cultivated in Florida by con artists, then sold for cheap to chumps in box stores, thinking they're getting a deal when all they're getting is a slow demise, no matter what. Someone said mist, so now I mist. imagining my home a 1970s smooth pad with one of those egg chairs, cocaine on the coffee table, and thick green palms in a corner. At least I could start with the palm part. The 1970s lasted 2 weeks. Then the 80s set in, and death began its new wave lapping up the stock. I'm not giving up, though. Someone said talk to them. So when the cat's asleep, I approach a frond and speak into its green microphone. I love you, I say. Don't die. I'm sorry this isn't Madagascar, the 1970s, or July. This is called, this poem begins with an epigraph by the poet Heather Crystal from her poem Taxonomy of That November. The epigraph reads, "We were happy and wretched and cloudy and setting fire to everything for warmth." And the poem is called, "It's Something People in Love Do." It's a late film, not one of their best, clogged with a love interest that never really makes your pants itch. But when the Marx Brothers keep the train moving so the hero can make it to town to record the deed and afford to marry the girl of his dreams, they chop the whole damn train up to feed the fire. Frightened passengers in bustles and waistcoats watch their seats axed from beneath them as women cradle their children and men stand around looking affronted. Then they hack up the walls and the roofs, carrying armfuls of train forward to turn into steam to keep things moving. And I'm not saying we should watch less old movies. What I am saying is maybe everything's not a metaphor for trying to pay the bills on time. I love your credit score. It could pin my credit score to the late summer soil and pee on its head. My credit score would have to roll over and take it. But what do you think of that chicken dinner I made last night? How caramelized the thighs, the bourbon from a plastic jug. How beautiful that farmhouse looks, passing by in the distance. If we could get off this train, we could go get it and tear it to pieces with our teeth, tossing hallways and lintels to the flames. Then we could clean each other's faces with our tongues. It's called kissing. People in love do it. Just two more. This poem also begins with an epigraph. This one's by D.H. Lawrence from one of his letters, a letter to Lady Cynthia Asquith from 1915. "And I saw the sea lifting up and shining like a blade with the sun on it. And high up in the icy wind, an aeroplane flew toward us from the land." And this poem's called "Bring Me With You." "I looked at my ass in the large living room mirror this morning and thought, youth has left me, spinning slowly to a stop in the mud rut of a country road on the way to someplace locals dump dead refrigerators. I need to stop talking to myself and start exercising more. We begin by finding the power walkers unbelievably silly and end by wondering where we could get away with it without our friends seeing. I love the woman I sleep with every night, and I take this moment to thank her for all she does. On hot nights, we barely touch, but there's always some small part that does, a kneecap pressed along a thigh, the bottom of a foot against the top of a big toe. In the morning, I invariably wake up with my arms around her. If I were trying to save her from drowning, I'd grab her the same way. I'd lay flat and let her use me for a raft, the waves slopping up the side of my body. She, sitting with her knees up under her chin, one hand above her eyes, scanning the horizon, the other steadying herself on my ass." This is my last poem. Thank you all for coming and listening. Thank you again, Amy, for reading. This is called "Our Beautiful Life When It's Filled with Shrieks." "I'm doing a balancing act with a stack of fresh fruit in my basket. I love you. I want us both to eat well. We're not allowed to buy blackberries anymore because they're mean to their workers and you read left-wing news sites. Till when?" I asked, and you said nothing. So that's one healthy food off the list. "I'm still buying pineapples and you're still eating them. I guess you've never seen the websites about those. Nobody in the supermarket knows that I am a puma. This morning our cat rolled on the floor, showing me her belly, which I leaned down and rubbed. Beneath a backyard pine tree, the neighbor's cat was eating one of our cat's moles, at least one of the moles we rent from the landlord for her. It's so complicated staying alive sometimes. The voices of the collection agencies on the answering machine sound menacing. They're paid to sound that way, and they're not paid much more than the people they're menacing, which can get you thinking if you're the sort who likes to think about that sort of thing. Other people subscribe to adventure cycling magazines and read about men who rode across Turkey in the late 1800s, before anything was happening in the world, before cantaloupes probably existed, when you could get an honest wage for an honest day's blackberries, when we loved like fierce mountain storms with the blood of eagles in our hearts, exchanging grocery lists that just said you, 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 all the way down. Thank you.